From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
It is time for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, I know you are getting rained on a bit out in Nashville. We're about to have some like borderline triple digits here this weekend, so Ooh. Do you want to trade?
I know, because we usually get triple digits, and I mean, we're still in the 90s.
So it's like that tropical kind of rain.
Yeah, it's terrible, and it's just been totally nonstop. And yesterday, we were about to get into the car to go play a round of disc golf, and it just started pouring. Just like, well, all right. And that's kind of how it's been for the past week. It's just like, as soon as you try to go outside and do something, it just starts pouring.
Yeehaw. Well, yeah, fun times. That's a bummer. Well, I guess that'll give you an excuse to sit indoors and watch the Green Mountain Championship this weekend, which we're going to be chatting about on the show today. Disc Golf Pro Tour is back up and running. Jeff Spring is going to stop by for an interview, talking about some of the challenges of just getting this season going and keeping it going, more importantly. But before we really get into the show, let's celebrate with a little bit of news first, Sarah. The PDGA is hiring right now for an assistant at the International Disc Golf Center, which, I mean, go work at the IDGC. You get to maintain three courses there and work in, you know, one of the best places in disc golf. So if you are interested, it's a full-time position. You'll be working the pro shop and the courses and all that kind of stuff. And again, this is like, these courses are nothing to shake your fist at. W.R. Jackson, top course in the world. Steady Ed Hedrick course. I don't know if it's technically top rated, but it's beautiful. The Jim Warner course is super underrated, I think. It's a great facility. So if you're interested, please head over to the announcements section at pdga.com. You can see what you need to do to apply. Applications are open until September 13th. Sarah, I mean, if all things considered, like if I wasn't in California, I wouldn't mind going to work at the IDGC.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Especially if you're like the kind of person who just enjoys being outdoors and, you know, like seeing the fruits of your labor, so to speak.
For sure. I mean, I always say that my favorite job was it was a summer during college when I built hiking trails. And yeah, it's like hard, intense physical labor, but you're out in nature all day. We started early, finished early. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great. It was kind of like mindless, drama free. It was great.
Yeah. That'd be cool. All right. Another piece of news, sir. I don't know if you saw, but friend of the show, Simon Lazat, got engaged. I wanted to send out a congratulations to Simon and his new fiance, Natalia. She's great. Simon's great. So just, it's always, you know, 2020 has had a lot of crap, and it's nice to see some good things, and two people, in love kind of taking the leap. So congrats to them. You know, Sarah, we are both married folks. You got any married people advice for Simon?
It is not a fairy tale, which I'm sure, I mean, they've lived together, so they know that. And just try to find joy in one another whenever you possibly can. Even when you're stuck with one another for 6 months in quarantine. And
I mean, look, though, I think we're all at this point where, like, if you've survived the quarantine, you might as well, like, take the next step, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that was part of their decision. I think that makes perfect sense.
It could be. Hey, I've been pleasantly surprised at how copacetic things have been in my household during the quarantine. It's been good, man. Like, it's for how close we all are together all the time, no one has killed each other yet. I think that's a positive.
That's a positive, yep.
Yeah. And then one other piece of news before we kind of get into a little bit of a discussion about the Dynamitus Open broadcast. Sarah, did you see, I believe if you didn't see this, we might need to check and see if you're living under a rock. Brody Smith won his first tournament, a B-tier, out in Oklahoma. This is the Dynamic Disc Presents the Magnolia Open. in Durant, Oklahoma, and he beat out like people like Bo Tillman and Coda Hatfield. He averaged 10.29 rated golf, and the internet is very excited about this.
I saw that, yeah. I mean, the first thing I did, obviously, was, which is probably not very nice, but I was like, okay, you know, who is he playing up against? Was it just a small C tier where there was nobody there? And I was pretty surprised that there are some pretty big names on the list. So props to him. He's, I mean, making that learning curve look pretty flat.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think right now, Sarah, for him to go out there and in his first year and get a win like this? What's, you know, what does this mean in your opinion for just his future in disc golf?
Yeah, well, I think he's obviously a natural born athlete. He's, I mean, you don't do those types of ultimate trick shots and play ultimate at the level that he did or does, you know, just not having a lot of natural born skill. And then also as a ball golfer as well, he showed that he was able to kind of get on the tour there and be pretty successful. I don't know all of the details about his ball golf career, but I've heard that he's pretty good, has a low handicap, and it seems like he's kind of doing the same thing with disc golf. I am pretty surprised just knowing what I know about the learning curve. But when you've got someone like Paul McBeth as your coach and teacher, that's something nobody else really has access to, I guess, except for Hannah and maybe some of his closer friends. Yeah, that's the guy that you want teaching you disc golf for sure. So I think that's probably part of it, just helping his learning curve be a lot, like I said, flatter and just catching on way quicker than us normal people.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't even think about that component. I was more just looking at it from a pure, you know, talent and work ethic standpoint. But then you add in being able to have, you know, a 5-time world champion in your ear the whole time. That's a pretty significant advantage that a lot of people don't get. So I think it's great. I hope that, you know, it was interesting because after Ledgestone, it sounded like he was maybe a little bit burnt out, like a little bit frustrated with some things, frustrated with his own play. Not to the point where it was like, peace out, disc golf, but it was, I at least personally was a little bit like, oh man, I hope this doesn't mean that we're going to see less of Brody. And so for him to come out and very quickly turn it around into a victory, I think that'd be big for his confidence in the sport. And just show that the hard work has paid off and just make him keep working harder. So, you know, it's not going to be a bad thing if Brody Smith hits the tour next year and makes some noise just for, you know, not being on feature cards, but for working his way up. And, like, it's clear he can do that. So I look forward to it because I think having his presence here, you know, he's an athlete in general. Like, he has a little more of a social media presence, isn't afraid to mix it up, make a little noise. I think it's a good thing. So I hope we get to see more of it, and congrats to Brody. All right, Sarah, we had last week the Dynamic Disc Open. The Jomez production of it was on CBS Sports Network. I was able to tune in for most of it, although I will admit I did miss the skins match. I got busy on Saturday.
Oh, that was the best part.
Well, you can give us the recap on that. I was busy, and by the time I looked at the clock, I was like, dang it, it's gone. So hopefully that'll be up somewhere soon. My initial quick take is that it was fantastic production. Props to Jomez and the whole crew. I really enjoyed especially their new style of hole previewing with like a higher view drone and, you know, some landing zones marked on the course and everything. I would really like to see them implement that for regular tournament coverage now, so hopefully that gets in the mix. My one glaring point, and maybe this was taken care of a little bit more in the skins match, is that I would have liked to see more women's coverage. That was really my one big you know, negative to it. Tons of positives in terms of little player featurettes and showing, you know, Nate and Jerm did a great job of describing what disc golf is and how the little nuances and things like that. I thought for this being a network production with its aim to educate people about disc golf, show them the connections between golf and disc golf, I thought was really important. There were a couple pieces where they did that. That was really solid. However, to me, if I were an outsider watching that, I would have maybe felt like there was only like one or two women playing disc golf. So that was my one takeaway from it. But on the whole, I thought it was a great quality production. I hope we get to see more of it. Sarah, what do you got? What was your takeaway?
Yeah, I totally agree. I love the new graphic elements. Like you said, some of the landing zones were super cool, especially on a course like this where you've got a lot of par fours and fives, and it may be difficult to navigate the course as a viewer if you've never been there or if you don't play disc golf. So that was really cool as well. Yeah, that was my first and biggest takeaway as well, just the women's side of it. But I was just thinking from a production standpoint that it could be kind of difficult to splice that in, although they did kind of jump around every now and then to different cards. They obviously weren't able to get all 18 holes into each hour segment, so they were jumping around holes a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. There is probably some reason that we don't know about that they weren't able to do that. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that absolutely could be. I don't want to. I'm not trying to take away from the production as a whole. But you know, representation is important.
Definitely.
And I'm not trying to like draw too many lines between like the real world and the disc golf world, but you know, you look at last week with Chadwick Boseman passing away, the actor who played Black Panther and Jackie Robinson and several other roles, and you see the impact that he left just in representation, in, you know, in Black Americans being able to look and see an actor like them, in kids who went to the movie theater and saw themselves in Black Panther, and they don't normally get that on the whole. And we can extrapolate that to disc golf a little bit, and it's important for women to be able to see more women playing disc golf and have that representation there. So I hope that in future productions we get a little bit more of that. You know, this is kind of one of those, I think what we have to keep in mind with all this is this was one of those productions that it's like scratching the surface, right? And yeah. So this is the introduction. This is kind of the first taste. And hopefully if we get to have a more full meal of disc golf on these networks, then we have more representation involved.
For sure. Yeah. I will say So the skins match.
Yeah, give me the skins match.
So it obviously was equal representation. It was four teams so four doubles teams. And I was just on the dynamic disc page. Okay, so it was Ricky Wysocki, Paige Hsu, and then Simon and Katrina, and then Paige Pierce and Nico, and then Rebecca Cox and Paul McBeth. Okay. And long story short, Nico and Paige Pierce just
lit it up, right?
Racked it. Yeah, they just racked up all the skins. Katrina and Simon, I believe, got two, but it was pretty much the Nico and Paige show. It was exciting, and I really liked how they got some, I wouldn't call it maybe B-roll. They got some reactions. Heckling, but like, they have, you know, people cheering each other on, people talking a little trash,
yeah,
showing personalities. So I really enjoyed that part of it. It just seemed like people were happy to be playing, happy to know that they're going to be on CBS Sports. So I really enjoyed watching the skins match. That was what I was waiting for during the week. Definitely.
I know, and I was too. And then Saturday came, and I couldn't tell you right now what I did on Saturday, but it was clearly something that made me not be in front of a computer to watch it. Yeah, and hey, let's, again, one more time, props to Jomez and their whole crew for putting that together, and props to their more recent releases. They've been, it's kind of, it put the idea in my head because you were talking about, like, the reactions and kind of the mm-hmm. trash talking. They put out a mic'd up segment between Kevin Jones and Ricky Wysocki on their Patreon channel. And then today on the Straight Up YouTube channel, they had a practice round with Jeremy Colling and Paul Ulibarri where they were mic'd up. And I didn't get a chance to watch very much of it yet, but just the first couple minutes of it, like Uli with his very dry sense of humor and, you know, poking at Germ and stuff like that. It was fun. I would suggest people go check that out if they have a chance. You know, just Jonas kind of diversifying their productions a little bit more, which I think is smart. I think it's going to be something that they're going to have to do long term. You know, if live coverage keeps getting bigger, you know, we'll see what the future brings for them in terms of post production, but. If they can add these kind of lifestyle pieces or a little more personal, engaging pieces, I think that's really good.
Definitely.
All right. Let's take a break, Sarah, real quick. And then we will be joined by the director and CEO of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, Jeff Spring. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right. Welcome back to the show. The director and CEO of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, it's Jeff Spring. Jeff, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing great. Great to talk to you, as always.
Yeah, you too, man. Thank you for taking some time out. I know, obviously, things are pretty busy with the GMC coming up this week and the tour in general. Before we really talk about that, though, I just want to know, man, how's it feel to be home for a little bit? You're back in Vermont. I got to imagine that feels pretty good right now.
Oh yeah, it feels great to be back in the Green Mountain State. It was certainly a sigh of relief for me, just kind of getting back to a place I know I'm comfortable in, and you know, that allows kind of, you know, some familiarity, because honestly, some of the events that I went to was my first time even in some of those states or at those events. But it was great that everything went well on that trip. Now we're back and we're kind of like just gearing up for the rest of the season. And I finished my quarantine, my 7-day quarantine with a test on Monday. I actually got my negative test result back on my birthday. So that was nice. I was able to then see my family once I got that result back, and been able to have a couple days of relaxation while kind of gearing up.
Well, happy belated birthday. I would imagine that this year has maybe aged you a little bit more than one year. I mean, let's talk a little bit about all the challenges that you've faced this year, because obviously it's been just about a year now since you came on as tour director. Now, obviously your work was already going to be cut out for you anyway. But I don't think anyone could have really seen the curveballs that COVID and everything would throw you this year. You know, how have you had to adapt the whole year? What's been your secret to really rolling with the punches?
Yeah, I mean, to start, sure. We certainly didn't anticipate this type and depth of challenge, if that makes sense. So we did take over and make the switch from the Disc Golf Pro Tour 1.0 to 2.0 on my birthday last year. So it has been about exactly a year since that announcement that I was stepping away from my role at Smuggler's Notch Resort and becoming the director and CEO. And, you know, the off season was hectic in and of itself. We had to change the tour championship location this time last year, move it to Charlotte, readjust all the bits and pieces that come along with that. Big shout out to the Charlotte Disc Golf Club for being awesome and helping that happen. But then we had to, you know, it was just me. I was the only employee there for a few months. And then we got Seth Fenley back on board, and he helped, you know, with the scale up, the hiring process. And that was a huge push just to get everything ready for the start of the season. It was like all systems go all winter to just get that done. And I know we were a little nervous heading into the start of the season at the Memorial, you know, do we have everything lined up? Is everything going to go well? And then those questions were answered through the first events. And then even into Waco, you know, we were just feeling great. And I remember running up to the Waco portion. Yeah. The next set of challenges was presented. So that definitely has created, you know, a whole nother important layer to manage with all the COVID-19 travel restrictions, all of the safety policies that we've put into place. But really, the way we've handled it, Steve, to answer your second question directly, is by creating a policy that was comprehensive, that was adaptable, because we knew that as the season progressed after the restart, that we were going to see differences based on the locations that the tour was going to go to,
right?
Based on the progression of the pandemic. And so really that's been the cornerstone and the key for us, is that document that says, hey, this is what the PDGA has instilled. We're going to build on the PDGA COVID policy and put a lot of those best practices into policy, where we can actually verify and certify that, like, they're not just best practices, but they're policies that you must follow in order to play in our events.
Now, I can't imagine that at times that's always been easy. You know, you've got various cities and counties and states, and then on top of that, you have a wide variety of personalities among the touring player base. How have the players taken all of this? Have they been as flexible as you would hope they be, or have there been some hiccups along the way? Like, what's been your take on how the players have adapted along with the tour?
Yeah, I would have to say I'm proud of the players. I feel that we have scaled up in terms of enforcement as the season has gone on. We have noticed, you know, where our policy needs to advance. And the players in general as a group have come along and been good advocates and set good examples, you know, especially, you know, the players at the top of the heap. I can't say that, you know, we're pleased with every single player that's played in a Disc Golf Pro Tour event. You know, there have been, you know, certainly several warnings. And, you know, I hope that we get to the end of the year without having to escalate discipline. Most of the players have been very responsive when we've warned them and given them guidance on how they need to change their behavior. But those have been few and far between. Generally, you know, our policies, as we've escalated them, have gotten great buy-in. And, you know, I'll just shout out, you know, one of the most followed players in the game, Paul McBeth, who makes it easy for us to, you know, point to a great example for all the disc golf fans that are watching. You know, somebody who really is taking these policies seriously knows that that's what we have to do in order to continue this tour. So, you know, in general, I'm proud of the players. I know that it's a challenging time. I know that we ask a lot of the players. And I'd say one of the tough things is, you know, players that may be off the pro tour or play in a different event, which honestly is fairly few and far between in terms of touring pros. They've basically joined the pro tour and followed our schedule for the most part, as I think maybe you've seen and noticed.
Right.
But for the players that, you know, do see other events happening, they say, well, why don't I have to do this at this event or another event? And that's been a bit of a challenge, but in general, like, we probably do have the most restrictive policies, and that's for a reason, because we are working with state and local governments to ensure that we are following their policies. And the biggest challenge of which has been, you know, as we come up to the Northeast, we changed an event. We switched Maple Hill to a later date in order to give, you know, touring pros the opportunity to be in full compliance with state and local policies. And the reason that we need to do that is not just to adhere to policies, but it's to be responsible in our, you know, personal behavior, and to ensure that we're not going to be a vector or a point where we're causing the spread of, you know, the COVID-19 virus.
Did you, real talk here, did you think that we would get this far in the tour once it restarted, or did you think it was potentially going to shut down again?
Going in, there was certainly, I was unsure. You know, I kind of talk to our team regularly, and I'm chuckling because, like, you know, every week we talk about, like, the possibility and like what it looks like to, you know, cancel an event or suspend the tour again, and that's literally discussed every week with our team. You know, what are we seeing in terms of compliance from the players? Is it good enough? What is the actual event look like? Was it executed to the standard where we feel comfortable? You know, what are the test results saying? We've had more and more rolling in, and I'm happy to report they've all been negative. And we're going to see more coming in for the GMC, as a lot of the players have tested. And, you know, we've now gotten a couple dozen results, all negative. We're waiting on the final tests that just took place on Monday. So I would say that as we started back up, you know, there was uncertainty. And that uncertainty in, you know, kind of critical analysis of what we're doing continues. And so I'm unsure now that we'll make it to the end of the year. I am hopeful right now and very confident that we'll run the Green Mountain Championship. I feel the same way about MVP, which is coming up. We're just taking it one event at a time, in terms of, you know, feeling that we have a responsible, you know, impact, in terms of like running the event in each community we go to, that the players are adhering, and so on and so forth. So hopefully that makes sense. So I would say, yeah, I mean, it's one event at a time. And when we're looking at the event in front of us, you know, there's a certain degree of confidence, that escalates as we get closer, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I guess the big thing is, you know, I mean, it's all about doing it responsibly. And I feel like, you know, I feel like disc golf, for the most part, has been able to operate responsibly. Are there other, you know, what's been the biggest thing that you've learned throughout this whole process that's really kind of informed some of the decision making so that you could, you know, pull this off correctly? What's been like the biggest lesson?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson is that, you know, communication, you know, kind of expectedly is key. You know, we need to communicate exponentially more, it seems like, with like the local, you know, team on the ground, their community, their state, and then take all of that knowledge and communicate it with the players. And communicating with players has gotten easier as, you know, some of the standards that we've put in place become routine for the players to understand and execute. However, yeah, it's always, you know, over communicate rather than under communicate. You have to put that message out, confirm it, and then enforce it. And, you know, it sometimes takes all the way up to that enforcement when somebody's first coming onto the event site to stop them and say, you know, hey, here's the policy. Here's a, you know, that we expect that you've gotten the communication. We expect that you've read it. You know, do you have, you know, your mask? Do you understand? And even up to that point of like, hey, you're entering the event site, sometimes you need to communicate all the way up to then, especially with maybe players that are local and haven't been on the tour, haven't been to every tour stop. So, you know, for me, communication is definitely key. Getting the players, especially the influential players, like I mentioned about Macbeth, to buy in and spread that message. And also, like, I'm seeing more than ever now players self-policing themselves, like reminding other players, communicating to me if they see something that they think or is wondering is off. I think that the takeaway is that, you know, like, you gotta stay on top of communication. You gotta be open to hearing, like, what the locality is saying. In terms of Vermont, like, we've spent more time than ever like talking and understanding and communicating And then one thing about the last question you asked, like, we have canceled, you know, several events, like the Silver Series events, you know, I think there's a clear reason that we're seeing Elite Series being able to continue versus Silver Series. Elite Series teams are like, in terms of the Disc Golf Pro Tour staffs, are just more equipped to handle more things. You know, when I've talked to Silver Series tournament directors, for instance, they haven't wanted to like, hey, I don't have the staff, I don't have the volunteers, I can't really necessarily handle this. That, and they've been in locations which are harder to get to and have people follow, like, you know, Canadian Nationals. You know, yeah. Great team up there. They could have handled it, but we couldn't travel there. Talking about the event in St. Louis, the Charlie Vetner Open, that was kind of like not a great place to go to at that time. And, you know, just harder to deal with, you know, some of the mitigations that we're going to have to put in place. So, you know, we have canceled some events, you know, a lot of the Silver Series events, in honesty. You know, I've been just really proud of the Elite Series and the Disc Golf Pro Tour, you know, the full events that have really, you know, kind of mobilized and gotten more people than ever to help out on that staff. And, you know, the fact that we have not had spectators at nearly, you know, most events now, and then going through the rest of the season, probably the rest of the events, you know, make it, you know, a little bit more doable, because a lot of those folks that, you know, maybe would spectate really want to gear up and help make sure that the event happens as a responsible volunteer that's able to follow the policies, able to help communicate. So, yeah, I mean, communication is the big takeaway here on like, you know, getting communication into us on like what is needed, where, you know, the pandemic rates are at, and then also, you know, what we need to do, and then passing all that information on kind of through our channels to the players that are coming to the events.
Now let's talk a little bit about, you know, this quarantine that Vermont is requiring, which I was super happy to see the tour really, you know, I think one thing that you've really done on the tour is you've really leaned into following these local restrictions and publicizing that you're following the local restrictions. It'd be real easy, if we're being honest, for, you know, players to just go in and out of states and not necessarily have to, you know, I'm just saying, you can skirt the rules probably if you really wanted to. And so I commend the tour for being able to, you know, to hold players to it and to put yourself out there that you're doing it. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of the quarantine that some players are doing at Smugs. How many players would you estimate are actually kind of in this like Smugs bubble and have been there for a little while doing their thing?
I think we've got about 40 players that have taken us up on that. If you look at the numbers of the actual competitors in the event, predictably, and I actually am putting the final number in the 80s, that like from like even a couple of weeks ago, we had, you know, limited the event to about, you know, 120 competitors. And then we have seen that number drop all the way down into the low 90s, which again was something that I was expecting. So we're going to end up with about, I believe somewhere in the 80s of actual, MPO competitors, and around 20, FPO competitors. So, you know, I would say about half of the players there, have done a 7-day quarantine in Vermont with a test. There's a number of players that have done a 14-day quarantine, come directly from the Ledgestone and quarantined for 14 days. And then there are some folks that are quarantining at their homes and getting a test, or quarantining at their homes and then traveling straight to Vermont. Those are kind of the four options that we laid out in line with the Vermont state travel policy. So I'd say about half were in the state, half were out of the state. And then that's of the people that needed to quarantine. There's a number of people in Vermont and in New England counties that are in quote unquote green counties, which mean their transmission rates are low. So like they've got under 400 cases per million in their county in a northeastern state. And so those players coming from those counties do not need to follow any travel restrictions that the Vermont state has set, because they've been updated. And actually the Vermont state policy links to John Hopkins University, and they kind of use a section of the country that's within a day's drive from Green Counties. You can come right into Vermont. So there's a number of players that don't need to follow travel restrictions because they're coming from somewhere where COVID-19 isn't an issue or a big enough issue to have to quarantine, basically. Everybody else, yeah, there's a split. And, you know, big shout out to our administrative director, Seth Finley, because he's been following up, and every day I get an update, and I think we're down to 9 players that we're waiting for testing results on.
Wow.
And everybody else at this point in time has gotten us evidence that they're following their plan. That said, over the weekend, we did have to drop a couple players when we were made aware that they were playing in an event elsewhere that was not in a Green County. So we just called them and said, hey, we're dropping you from the event. You can't play. It's very clear that, you know, this is not, you know, part of the plan you submitted, and they, you know, had to understand that.
Wow. Well, I mean, yeah, what was the reaction to that? Acceptable, or, you know, did you have a couple quarrels there?
No, it was honestly pretty acceptable. To me, it seemed like, from what my understanding is, that they just were not paying enough attention.
Sure.
You know, and that's in terms of communication, that's why I talk about that being such a key, because, you know, not everybody reads all their emails.
Sure.
And so, I understand that it's tough. There's a lot of things going on, and I feel badly when somebody says, hey, I didn't understand the policy. I didn't understand what you're asking. But at the end of the day, it's their responsibility. And we're not making exceptions. There's no exceptions to be made. You know, we have over 100 people that are following these policies, and it's not fair to those people that someone else is potentially trying to come in and play this event without following it, number one. Number two, it's not fair to the Vermont community, you know, number three, it's not responsible event practice. So that's just, you know, where it is. And no, everybody's been pretty understanding. Any pushback that we've had is actually been ahead of the fact by saying, hey, if you want to play this event, this is what you got to do. And people saying, like, really, do I really have to do this? Those have been few and far between. And those players have made their choices whether or not they're going to do it or whether or not they're going to, you know, drop the event. And so, as you can see, you know, as I mentioned, the numbers in the event have come down. That's been expected. And really what we're doing, as you know, Steve, is running a pro tour. So we were looking at the guidelines, surveying players, getting feedback, getting an understanding that will the event be able to host, you know, get enough players in so that this is, you know, not like a half field or less. And I'm happy to say that, like, this field is going to be a great, strong field. We'll miss a few of the regular names, but it's, in my mind, you know, very much a very strong field at the top. You know, when you see those 1,000 rated plus players, and then 1030 rated plus players, you know, we're going to have, you know, Macbeth, Ricky, you know, Simon, Eagle, Dickerson, they've all decided, hey, this is worth it. And then the good part about, you know, in terms of the pandemic restrictions, is that Vermont is such a low rate of transmission that once you get in, you can really travel anywhere in the country without having to follow a travel restriction. So we're able to then, anybody who is quarantined, tested, gotten into Vermont responsibly, they can travel next week straight for the MVP Open.
Very nice. Very nice. Do you think any of those players who have been there at Smugs maybe have a leg up on other players who didn't quarantine there?
In terms of
just being able to get some more time on the course or, you know, anything like that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we did have a specific time of day where the courses were cleared. One day Brewster, one day Fox, and everybody was vacated from the premises, and people that were quarantining on site were able to then practice the course. So there's a possibility. I think that there's probably some validity to that. And they definitely, you know, have been doing nothing other than, you know, playing during the quarantine hours and quarantining. So I think that there might be something to be said for that, Steve. And, you know, I think that the group of players that are committing to doing this are like all in on obviously their profession in the tour. And this being, you know, what is happening for Pro Disc Golf this year with the cancellation of the national tour and a postponement to 2021 for those events, you know, the players that are in on this in looking to, you know, win and qualify and advance in the Tour Championship are here, they're focused, and I would expect those players to shine this weekend and at MVP.
I don't know if you're allowed to be in the prediction business anymore since you're the tour director technically, but I'm going to ask you for one anyway. You got any good predictions for who's going to win the Green Mountain Championship or at least perform very well?
I am rooting for all players.
Yeah, come on, well, Jeff. Steve.
I will give you just general thoughts. I'm interested to see how Simon plays. He got engaged yesterday.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see, you know, what kind of effect that may have on his game and his performance in the tournament. I know he, you know, is a great friend of the event. He's always come here. He's always, you know, talked highly of it. You know, I think the usual suspects, Macbeth and Waisaki. Ricky's been here doing a 14-day quarantine, coming off a big win at Ledgestone. Macbeth has seemed, you know, in one of the Disc Golf Network interviews he did with Mahmood to talk about how his putting game has really re-clicked. So, you know, I can't count those folks out on the FPO side. You know, Paige has been here quarantining and practicing. We saw Kat win last week, and we know that she's going to be here again. But Hokum is the defending champ. So nothing too wild in terms of the interesting players to watch from me. You know, I think Casey White just won an A tier, and this is his favorite course. So that's like from the back of the pack, somebody that's not necessarily one of the top rated players in the world. That would be interesting to watch. And then Chris Dickerson plays the woods here great. If he can figure out a way to get a couple low rounds on Fox, I would expect him in the mix. And, you know, Sunday is on Fox. So if he puts down two good rounds on Brewster in the woods, we all know that, you know, Sunday Dickerson is a thing now. So.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. All right, I want to just kind of shift gears and look forward a little bit more. Obviously, we're talking about a lot of how the year has gone. But I kind of want to talk about where the tour is going. I think it's, by and large, you know, at least externally, it seems like it's been a success this year, especially considering all the roadblocks that life has kind of thrown at you. So what's... I want to ask right now, and I hope this isn't too bold of a question, but you know, are we at a point now where the tour is profitable, where it's easier to keep it afloat right now?
Absolutely, we're thrilled at the success that we've had this year, and it's not only the Disc Golf Network. I'll touch on that quickly.
I was going to ask about that. Don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, we've had great success there, and certainly that has been a great source of revenue. But we also want to thank all of our partners. Like, we've had escalating support from the big names in the industry, endemic partners, manufacturers, you know, retailers, disc golf retailers. But now outside of the sport, we're starting to, you know, really ramp up on some significant conversations. So that adds to the profitability of the tour, for sure. I mean, after, you know, I can just tell you that we are, you know, at a more, you know, by every week, it seems like we're, the future looks more promising. And that goes for, you know, development of the tour, competition standards, venue development, scheduling. But it also goes to profitability and, you know, being able to hire more people. Like, I'm already like pretty deep in off-season planning, and you know, we're going to be opening up some new positions once the Tour Championship ends. And, you know, honestly, with everything that has been going on, the growth of the game in the pandemic, we've almost felt the need to hire more people in season, which I've been reticent to do. I really like to go through a full hiring process.
Sure.
And it just, you know, giving it like its full due, setting expectations, really analyzing the roles and positions that the tour needs to take that next step. But I mean, our plans, you know, are definitely incorporating national media in the future, and like, you know, national levels of communication and PR, and, you know, really looking forward to scale up to another level. And, you know, that's going to be new, I think, for the sport, going to be new for our team. But I really think that, you know, the Disc Golf Pro Tour staff this year, I've been, you know, blown away with the, you know, just the dedication to everybody's job. You know, everybody's been working, you know, well over the 40 hours that a salary position, you know, outlines. And that's not because I'm like cracking the whip. It's because everybody's all in and just wants to produce, you know, great results for the players, great results for the fans, and, you know, a promising future for the sport. And I guess the last thing on that is, you know, the biggest partner in helping us get this done is really the PDGA. I mean, I know that, you know, we've talked, you and I, Steve, I'd obviously transitioned almost totally away from your role, and congratulations on your new role.
Thank at
your
you.
Desk. But, you know, I know that I saw some heat received by the PDGA for, you know, the cancellation or postponement of the national tour until 2021. But as I've said many times, and as I mentioned in this interview with communication, probably can't say enough because not everybody hears it every time. You know, they set the table for us to be able to do what we're doing, you know, and have provided the support, provided the exposure through their channels to say, hey, no national tour this year, but we're going to support the Pro Tour. And let that be that elite series that people can get excited about, that can watch, and that can hopefully take some of the momentum of all these new players and kind of galvanize it and take some, you know, make some good out of it. So, you know, I know that like our manufacturer support has been great, and the PDGA support has been great, and I couldn't really be more thankful, you know, and happy to report that we're working, you know, closer together than ever before, and look forward to, you know, great steps forward in that partnership in years to come.
You know, looking at, we talked, you touched briefly on Disc Golf Network. I kind of wanted to ask about that. What's the, you know, what do you see, what's your hope for the next step with the Disc Golf Network in terms of, you know, whether it's equipment, production, personnel, where do you see this continuing to grow? Because I think that's probably been one of the tours greatest successes this year, if not the greatest success, other than just being able to actually function, right? yeah. What's you know, what's your outlook for the Disc Golf Network now?
Our outlook is very positive for the network. You know, we will continue, and you know, basically everything that comes in will go right into the development of the tour and the network. So yeah, we are planning to scale up a bit in the off season. There's a number of different, you know, kind of jobs that we need to hire for that would be supporting the network. As some folks may know, Mahmood has moved into the booth. And so that really helps having more people in the production booth, producing the show, you know, in the actual, you know, booth. So not on site, not cameras, is key. That helps with all those comments where like, oh, the camera was shaky or went to the ground, you know, like, those, the clean transitions, the graphics, the stats, you know, the interviews, all the production value increasing, is really because, you know, Mamu has been grinding, but also that he's been in a position where he can help our internal booth, which is JVD, Gary O, you know, like back in Milwaukee. Obviously, we added to the booth in Bend as well. So we're looking to hire more people to help that process continue to mature. Because like as soon as we try to do more things on the ground, that means there's more things to coordinate in the booth. So you know, it's clear to all of us why there's like, you know, 50 people in a booth at an NFL game, which sure. is easier to film than disc golf, and like 100 people part of the production on a PGA Tour event. And you know, I don't think that there's any shortcuts to getting like, you know, basically a smooth and beautiful production for the viewer at home, you know. So everything down to like, you know, sound quality is complex in order to deliver a sensation and an experience to a viewer that is smooth, right? So the back end, it seems maybe should be simple, but you know, there's so many parts and pieces. So in terms of the Disc Golf Network, that's kind of, you know, what I'll say in terms of like where our head's at in development. We want to create a better and better and better live product. We feel that like the support we've gotten this year justifies us to prioritize that live product going forward. And you know, in terms of media in general, Steve, we think that the system that's in place now is sustainable, is excellent. And basically, you know, we couldn't like say more about our post-production media team partners, like Jomez being, you know, one of the biggest ones for us. You know, they've been doing great work. We're partnering them, you know, to deliver the CBS broadcast. You know, they
right.
led the way. But you know, obviously we're working really hard behind the scenes to make sure that like all the media teams that are on site are working together to deliver all the footage that they could possibly have to cut up. Right. So some of that footage is from Central Coast. Some of that footage is from the Disc Golf Network. Most of it is from the Jomez crew. And they did an incredible job, you know, getting that project to the finish line and really just leading it all the way, obviously with the support of Dynamic Discs. But, you know, I do see that as kind of like, you know, maybe breaking the seal moment. And you know, we don't expect to be doing any deals that look similar to that deal in the future. I'll say that.
Sure. All right. Well, I mean, let's... one more thing I wanted to ask you. Can you give any, you know, any hints as to... I know we're getting toward the end of this season. We still got to get over the finish line, but... Any hints as to what the tour might look like next year? Planning to add venues, change venues, anything that you can, even if you can't fully tell us, maybe just give people a hint so we can get everyone excited?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been working with Mike Downs at the PDGA where we're pretty much there with the schedule. I would, you know, obviously the NT has been broadcast well before now to be basically returning in with the same six events,
right?
You know, so those events will be on the Elite Series next year. But we are talking about how we can work together more, and you know, when we have that answer, you know, we'll make it public in terms of like our side of things. Yeah, I mean, I would look to run back most of the events. Like, we're very happy. It was a very unique year. We're happy with all the events that have been executed. And, you know, we may be making a few changes. You know, we have the Silver Series. Some events may need a break, may need to bump down in the Silver Series. We have a couple new venues we're looking at. And those decisions are really like in the final stages. So I would expect certainly announcements this month on what the tour schedule looks like for next year. We have been looking at how we can expand outside of the U.S., and we're hopeful that we might have some international stops next year, and that's Ooh. Certainly something that we wanna lock in. So I hope that when, you know, later this month we we announce the schedule, you'll see some non-U.S. stops on there. Because we know that there's great markets for disc golf around the world, and we're excited about that. But yeah, I would expect a few more events. We want to grow sustainably. That's really like one of our mantras, one of our core values is sustainability. That's not just for like our employees, for the players, but that's also, you know, for our venues and scheduling. We want to be able to do a little bit more each year instead of trying to double or triple what we're doing, if that makes sense. So. And lastly, we're excited about some big news that we're looking to announce in the next week or two regarding the end of this season surrounding the Tour Championship, which we've been working on for a while, and we're excited to kind of make public in the coming days.
Awesome. Really looking forward to it, Jeff. Obviously, you know, from a personal standpoint and professional standpoint, I just want to say thanks. You've taken an incredibly difficult year and run with it and made it successful and brought people a lot of happiness and joy in the process. You know, being able to give people some entertainment and some sports right now is big. So thank you for that, and good luck with the GMC this weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate your time, and always happy to come on, and hopefully be as transparent as possible with the disc golf fans and the entire world
of the sport
that we love.
All right, that was Jeff Spring, the tour director and CEO of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. All right, thank you again to Jeff Spring, one of the hardest working people in disc golf. I'm glad he's able to get a little bit of downtime at home this week, and again, a happy belated birthday to him as well. All right, Sarah, we've got the Birdie Fuel hot rounds. How hot were the rounds this weekend? Because I feel
hot.
I keep expecting them to cool off, and
no,
they have not been.
And this was even an off week as far as like big pro events go. And the other cool thing is there wasn't a single common tournament between the FPO and the MPO.
Ooh, nice.
These were just from all different, yeah, just like all over the place. Okay, so we're going to start with the fifth hottest rated round on the women's side. That was from Melinda Apton. She played in the 47th Rochester Flying Disc Open presented by Dynamic Discs. Wow, 47th. That's a long time running.
That's one of the old school ones.
Yeah, they have a great club up there. She shot a 942, her second round, to take first place. Congrats on that win. And then I'm totally going to botch this first name. How would you pronounce that? Leek?
Oh, gosh. Leek. I really wish I knew how to pronounce this one, too. Is it? Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. Lawrenson. She played in the Stovner Putin 2020 presented by Innova Champion Discs, like, in Norway. Are you trying to look up how
Vladimir Putin? I don't know, you said Putin and I got scared. I'm looking up how to pronounce her
okay.
name.
All right. She shot a 979.
Lika.
Okay. Lorenzen. Okay.
At least that's what the internet tells me. I'm sorry. We should, you know what, Sarah? We should probably.
No, we should be better at this.
Next time what we need to do is look up the pronunciations beforehand.
Deal.
All right. We'll do that.
Anyway.
People.
Lika, she shot a 979, her second round, to take first place in a pretty decent field. Congratulations. And then Macy Walker, again, she is this young woman in Eastern Tennessee. I believe she just turned 21. She celebrated a birthday last week. And she played at the Meet the Mountains at Wing Deer in Johnson City, Tennessee, shooting a 979, her first round, to take first place. Congratulations. She's been blowing up the hot rounds list. She gets my hot round of the week. For sure.
Yeah.
The next is my disc golf wife, Ellen Widboom. No surprise here. She shot a 995, her third round, to take first place at the 35th annual Three Rivers Open presented by Dreammakers Automotive. And that event was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Congratulations on another win, Ellen. And then Colleen
McInnes. Ellen's
McInnes.
Having like breakout year. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh my gosh, I know. I'm so proud of her. Colleen McInnes, again. I believe she was at the top of our hot rounds list a couple weeks ago, but she shot another four-digit rated round. She shot 1,000 on the dot at the Foxwood Open, driven by Innova and Explore Waterloo region in Baden, Ontario. That was her third round to take first place. And then Owen Scoggins with a 10-13 rated second round to take first place at the High Sierra Cup in Twain Hart, California.
Yeehaw.
Dang.
Yeah, that's a good round for
Owen.
Insane.
It is, yeah.
It's good to have her back on the scene. All right, we're going to stay on the West Coast for the moment, and we're going to start with Jared Gogel taking a 10-59 rated second round at the Kalapuya Classic. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This was his first round, and he took second place. This was in Albany, Oregon. Nicely done, Jared. Kevin McCoy, I'm sure you people have heard that name before. My goodness. He shot a 10-59 rated round. It was just a one-round event at the Southern Nationals warm-up number 2 Lake Dundee in Griffin, Georgia. And he took first place in that single round tournament. Nathan Queen, my fellow lefty, getting in a little bit of home state action at the Oak Hollow Open 2020, driven by Innova. This was in High Point, North Carolina. He took third place with a 1068 rated opening round. Back over at the Kalapuya Classic, if it's Oregon, it's Scott Withers, who is now putting his name in as Scotty Withers on the PGA website.
I saw that, yes.
Anyway, he shot a 1069 rated opening round and won that tournament. Out at the Kitsap Classic just up the road in Port Orchard, Washington, Christopher Holden took tied for fourth place, even though he shot a 1072 rated second round. Dang. That must have gotten him. I wonder where he was earlier in the tournament. Nicely done, Christopher. And then our hottest rated round came from overseas in Neuss, Germany at the 8th Rennbahn Park Open. Timo Hartmann shot a 1087 rated third round to take first place. So, hey, a little bit of international action on the list today. I always like to see that. As usual, the Birdie Fuel Hot Rounds are presented by, yes, Birdie Fuel Coffee. You can go over to birdiefuelcoffee.com, use the code PDJRadio at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order. Sarah, what are you drinking from Birdie Fuel these days?
So I had to combine. So I have these airtight, you've seen them, like airtight canisters. Yeah, and I've got like three of them, but I have more coffee beans than I have containers. So I feel like I grabbed the mixed bag, Missy Gannon's mixed bag, because it was already mixed, and then the rest of another blend that I had, and I kind of put them together, and then I made a giant batch of cold brew to last me for the week. I posted that video on Instagram, and it's getting crazy interactions. People love cold brew, and don't love spending $4 to $5 on it at Starbucks.
No, there's no reason, man. You just make that at home.
Yeah, and I made like 22 ounces of it, so it's gonna last me for 4 or 5 days.
Wait, 22 ounces will last you 4 or 5? How
much? Oh, sorry, sorry, 20. Coffees? Sorry, my bad. 22 cups.
Okay, that seems more appropriate. I was gonna say, I don't know, what size coffee are you drinking? Anyway,
no, I drink like 14 to 16. I have that big like metal container that I use.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I've been slacking on making cold brew, and I keep telling myself to make it, and I forget, and then I just drink hot coffee in the afternoon, turn on the air conditioner.
Ugh, gosh.
I know, I don't like it.
I can't do it.
I know. All right, hey, so we've got the Green Mountain Championship coming up this weekend. Disc Golf Pro Tour staple. It's been on the tour every year of the tour, minus 2018 when they hosted Pro Worlds there. It's obviously the reason we had Jeff Spring on. It's his tournament, his home area. And just nice to have the DGPT back on after a couple weeks off. You know, we kind of went in a sprint for a couple weeks with some major Disc Golf Pro Tour action, got to breathe a little bit, and now we're into kind of this East Coast swing that everyone loves so much because wooded disc golf.
That's right.
And but also not too much wooded disc golf, because we're gonna go Brewster Ridge wooded for two rounds, but then Fox Run Meadows, which is like, I'd say like 75% open.
Yeah.
65% open. I don't know. There's that whole big section of open holes, and then you got a few little back nine jobs sprinkled in there. But either way, it's gonna be a good one. It always is. It's just this stunning resort. You know, it's kind of removed from major cities and stuff like that. But gosh,
but
it's
right
just
down
such
the road
a great place.
From Ben and Jerry's.
That's right.
Which is just perfection.
Yeah. So Sarah, what are you? You know, obviously it's kind of nice. This is one of the few places that we've both been to.
Right.
You know, what are you looking forward to most for the weekend? As we look at the GMC, is this, I mean, we can just talk overall picture here, and then we'll kind of get into our thoughts. But what are you really looking forward to for this tournament?
I really enjoyed the Brewster Ridge course. I think it's one of those courses where most of the holes are memorable. Obviously, I played rounds there for the.
Didn't you shoot like the best round of your life there?
I did.
That's why
it ended
like
up being like 997. It started off as 1,001 or something, and then it ended up 997 or something like that. But yeah, but that's, I don't think that's why I like it so much. It's just that it's, I have a terrible memory for disc golf holes. It's like movies. Like, I have to watch a movie two or three times before I even remember that I've seen it. I know I'm terrible. But it's the same thing with disc golf courses. There's a lot of courses that I have played several times, but if you're like, oh, would you throw on hole six? I'm like, I don't even know what hole six looks like. What can you walk me through from the beginning? And Brewster Ridge, I believe, is just memorable hole after memorable hole. I think it's very fair for both lefties and righties. It's got a lot of challenging, tight fairways, a bit of elevation change. You've got some OB lines in the woods. It's just like beautiful, mature trees. There's lots of rock and there's a little island hole, and it's just, there's something for everybody. I think there's a good mix of distances, par threes and fours. It's just, I think it's a great course. I really love it. And then Fox Run is kind of the exact opposite. When you do have open holes, it's not just throw as far as you possibly can. You also have to keep it inside the lines. And where this gets tricky is when the weather kicks up. So if you find yourself playing on a windy day,
yeah,
then those OB lines feel a little bit closer than they did during a practice round, perhaps. And there is a good bit of elevation change. There's some water to contend with, like OB lines in the form of property lines. There's some absolutely beautiful views. So I think that's the most memorable part of Fox Run for me. I actually found a picture that I took when I was there at Pro Worlds that is just, it's just spectacular. And I'm not like a professional photographer by any means, but it's just the backdrop. I'd never played disc golf in a setting like that before. So I was just doing all the oohing and aahing for like two straight rounds before I actually realized, like, man, this is real life. This is really cool. It's just fresh air and beautiful views.
Yeah, it's a tremendous place. And yeah, I think you encapsulated it all very well. I tend to prefer Fox Run here because it gives me like the Euro vibe in terms of like kind of the a little more open and rolling hills and very green, but you still have to keep it between the lines. And it really causes some challenges. It's also very spectator friendly in that regard. It makes a great final round, final round of a tournament course. I don't think there's going to be a lot of spectators this weekend. In fact, I should know off the top of my head, but I don't. I apologize. I can't remember which phase of the tour this one's considered in, but I know given all the restrictions and them having to quarantine the players, I would imagine this probably isn't going to be a big spectator one for just spectators even being allowed. Yeah. That said, you can spectate all of this on the Disc Golf Network. It'll be live every day. Thank you. It'll be live every day. Scores and stats on UDisc Live. If you're not doing a live thing, you can watch it on Jomez Pro, Gatekeeper Media, or GK Pro. Dan Ney is going to be there for photography this week. He's an excellent photographer, NEY. Look him up. He goes by Local Route DG, I believe. Cool. Is his handle for these for photos. Yeah, at Local Route DG. And all in all, it's just a really, you know, it's a beautiful venue, longer tournament, so it gives you a little more enjoyment, I think, for as a viewer. And it's kind of the intro into the home stretch of the season, which, you know, the season's been abbreviated, but this is a really good place to start that home stretch. So, Sarah, what, real quick, just the couple of stats we got. Brewster Ridge is a par 61, 8,025 feet for the MPO, and 7,670 for the FPO. You switch over to Fox Run for rounds 2 and 4, and it becomes a par 63, 9,370 feet for the MPO, 8,415 feet for the FPO. And honestly, a couple really long walks in there, which I like. They make you think a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
So a couple storylines I'm going to kind of keep an eye on this weekend, and then, you know, we can make our picks. Ricky Wysocki coming off the victory and traditionally plays very well here. I think he's won this event three or four times. It would not surprise me to see him go back to back here. I think if you're, you know, if we're looking at picks for him to be able to go from Ledgestone to here and go back to back, you gotta like your odds if you're picking Ricky Wysocki. You know, Katrina Allen, we talked to her last week on the show, wondering how she does in keeping the momentum going. I think both of these courses suit her game well. You know, quarantining away from Vermont and then going in, there was still some travel involved. I don't know what the situation is for all the other FPO players, but I am excited to see how she comes back from her own win at Ledgestone. And then really, I know we talk about this dude all the time, and I will cop to some bias here because I think he's great. I'm really looking to see if Eagle McMahon can finally crack the code at this tournament. Traditionally, for whatever reason, he just has not fared well here.
Yeah.
You know, he actually ended up, let me think here, did he skip this one last year? So, yeah, he skipped this one last year. In 2018, at Pro Worlds, he finished in, 39th. In 2017, I should have had this beforehand, I'm sorry. In 2017, he came in also 39th.
Wow.
That's wild.
I'm surprised by that.
Well, look, that's the thing, right? This venue looks like it should suit him very well. We know he can play in the woods. We know he can bomb accurately. For whatever reason, in the past at least with him, I know there's been kind of a mental block. And then he went into Pro Worlds, and there was a ton of pressure that he was putting on himself. I remember seeing him be very emotional at this tournament. So we're 2 years removed from there. We've seen him have these two great wins this year, back-to-back. He's talked about being, you know, having a different mindset, trying to be more mature. I'm wondering if he takes that into this weekend. Now, interestingly enough, him, Eric Oakley, Calvin Heimberg, and Thomas Gilbert all threw together a very quick practice tournament that we scored over on UDisc Live last week. And Eagle actually only played three of the four rounds on it. I don't know why he didn't play the fourth round. I'm hoping, you know, but over the three rounds, he wasn't doing stellar. He came in at 7 under through the first three rounds. Actually, so he dropped midway through round three. I heard it was raining, so it could have been something to do with that and just not wanting to hurt himself or whatever. But, you know, he wasn't doing terribly, but he wasn't lighting up or anything. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of the young Eagle McMahon this weekend. And I guess if you do want a little bit of a preview kind of maybe who will perform well, and granted, you know, these are low-key practice rounds, Calvin Heimberg over four rounds here last weekend shot 28 under par.
Dang.
So, compared to Thomas Gilbert at 9 and Eric Oakley at 6. So, Calvin, you know, on another level earlier this season, seeing if he can get back to that. Sarah, let's do some picks.
Let's do it.
Who's first this week?
I get to pick first.
Okay.
Hmm.
Well, I need to find our listener picks, too.
Oh, yes.
I got this.
Let's see. I've been talking to Katrina quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And we know that she's getting some mental coaching help from Natalie Holokoy. And mm-hmm. actually, the last time I saw Natalie was at Smuggler's Notch, funny enough.
Ooh, connection? Does that mean you're picking Katrina?
I'm getting there. I know we hyped up her new Instagram page last time we talked to her. And I don't want to give it away because it's for women only. So I don't want to give all of her secrets away to the non-women folk out there who aren't part of her page, but she did talk about some strategies, mostly mental, around getting to a course or getting to an event only a couple days to spare and not letting it stress you out, And that's kind of the situation that they were in. They quarantined in Peoria and then drove up to Vermont. And because of that, they're only there. I think she's only maybe getting one or two practice rounds on each course. And that's kind of what I deal with as well. I have a full-time job, and so I get to the location and have one or two rounds. If it's raining, maybe one or zero. Sorry, I know this is like the longest intro to a pick that has ever been, happened on the show.
If you don't pick Katrina at this point.
All I'm saying is that everything that she has talked about, and I feel like her mental state, all leads me to believe that she's going to do extremely well. And when she is on point off of the tee and around the basket, she smashes. So, yes. I should have just said Katrina from the get-go.
That's cool. Thank you. I'll keep it short and sweet. I'll take Paige Pierce.
Okay. Sometimes I feel like I just have, you know, I just
that's
say,
okay.
Like,
I usually do all the long run-ins, so that's totally fine. It was your turn. Right, cool. Who you got for the NPO?
Oh, gosh. It's so hard. I feel like Calvin needs one. Like, I feel like I've been picking him. And
I mean,
just
they all need one, right? Unless their name is Paul, Ricky, or Eagle. They all need one.
I know.
Chris Dickerson, like, needs one.
Is Simon going to have some extra swagger since he's an engaged man now? I don't know.
Or is it going to be distraction mode? I don't know.
Well, I'm assuming she's there with him.
Yeah, I don't know if you get swagger when you're engaged. I mean, you're generally just, like, happy.
I don't know. I was never engaged, so I'm not sure.
I was happy. I don't remember swagger.
I was engaged for, like, 4 days. That's a story for another time.
Oh, love story time. Next week's show.
Man, Chris Dickerson. Okay, we have not done our Chris Dickerson segment yet, so this is going to be that. I'm picking Chris Dickerson to win.
All right, I like it. Good, 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 good. I'm gonna take Ricky. I want Ricky to go back to back. I think he if he's gonna go back to back this season, it's gonna be at these two tournaments because he's already got Ledgestone and this tournament's got his name basically on it. So
yeah,
Richard Wysocki for the win.
All right. Well, I can't leave Paul McBeth in the dust. That would just be silly.
Well, wait. Are we gonna?
Top five
FPO.
Top five FPO. Well, now you know who I'm picking for MPO. Man. I'm gonna go Hokum.
Yeah.
Although I'm trying to review quickly how she's done at these courses.
She, I believe, won there last year, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
There you go.
This was after, like, right after Robin had his, like, when had a seizure and stuff. So
yeah, and she got third at Pro Worlds in 2018 on the same courses. So yeah, I'm gonna go Hokum. And then we're at it, I'll go McBeth.
All right, you know who won Pro Worlds? Mugs at Smugs.
Of course I do.
Paige Hsu. So I love Paige. Paige's top five. I got Paige and Paige this week, and then MPO. I'm gonna go with the engaged guy, quote unquote, swagger. I'm gonna go Simon Lizotte. Top
five. We'll
see
if that's a thing. I don't know.
I hope it is.
Yeah.
At least for top five. So yeah, those are the picks. Oh, we got Andrew Lockridge back this week with the picks for the listeners. Thank you, Andrew, as always. Andrew has got Paige Pierce for the win and Haley King for top five.
Nice.
I like that one. And then Ricky Wysocki for the win in MPO, and Calvin Heimberg with the top five. Again, if you want to send in your picks, the next event will be the MVP Open at Maple Hill. Send us those to radio@pdj.com. You can represent the listeners. Sarah, what's the current standings again? I'm up by like 3 or 4 points on you, right? It's the gap is closed.
Yes, it is. You've got 24 points. I have 21, and listeners are 20.
Okay, I'm gonna win this weekend.
Ha, ha, ha.
I can feel it. We'll, you know, see. What I'm getting smoked in my other picks challenge right now, which is the annual Tour de France picks that my wife and I do, because the Tour de France is on and I'm very excited, but I'm not excited that I keep losing every day. So anyway, hopefully that will be not happening over here for the Green Mountain Championship. All right, it's time for runner layup, Sarah. And we've got more Andrew Lockridge. Should we just turn this into the Andrew Lockridge show?
I think so.
Andrew Lockridge Radio.
He should be our third host.
I love it.
Andrew.
Maybe we'll put him in. Maybe he can replace me when.
Oh, I was planning on solo. I'm right.
That's cool.
Solo.
Go solo. Now. That works, man. You should. We need a solo.
That
a
would
solo.
Be awful.
Ah, it'd be good, man. Solo women's going. Podcast.
Or, I mean,
you could have husband. a different female co-host every week with you.
Heyo.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I feel like you and Sean might talk.
Murder each
this,
other.
This would be, no, I just feel like it'd become a Smashbox length podcast.
Well, no, it would be him talking and me trying to get a word in, mostly.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the 1 hour that I get, not with him, so let's keep it
Yeah,
going.
You don't want to do that.
I love my husband, everyone. Okay, here we go. Here's Andrew Lockridge's. He submitted this a few weeks ago, I believe. And it is. I chose this one for this week because it is actually very timely.
Timely, yeah.
Yes. His statement is Brody Smith will be 1,000 rated before Paige Pierce. And as much as I don't want to run this because I would love to see a female in our sport hit 1,000, obviously he's on the up and up with his skill level. He proved that at this last event where he averaged 10.29, and it's a numbers game. Brody is playing in a men's division where the ratings are higher, and so he is able to get higher rated rounds because of that.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yep, and I would also run this. So I think maybe a better, you know, analogy to this would be like, we got to increase the number for Brody. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, like give her a handicap, give Paige a
or,
handicap.
Or just, you know, Brody will hit 10.30 before Paige hits 1,000. You know what I mean? Because again, like you were saying, they're just by the propagators alone, at least, you know, I'm no mathematician, and the PDGA ratings for someone who
it's
worked for the PDGA for 2 years is still, yeah, kind of mystifying. But I think Brody does just get a leg up just because of, like you said, playing against other players who are rated 1,000 or higher. So I don't know what the math would be to like make those equivalents, because obviously a 10.50 is not going to be the same as 1,000 in FPO. So I don't know if there's a real good clean equivalent, but I feel like you'd have to bump it a little bit. If we were saying like, will Brody Smith be 10.20 before Paige Pierce hits 1,000? Then I might lay that up.
Well, think about it this way. What is Paul McBeth rated right now?
10.56.
So why not compare the highest rated female in the world with the highest rated male in the world? And that should
be will Brody Smith hit 10.56 before Paige Pierce hits 1,000?
Well, it's got to be, what's Paige's rating? Like 984,
I think.
984? So it would be whatever that is, like 80 points different. I don't know. You know what I'm saying, though. Like,
yeah,
those
yeah.
two are equivalent on the FPO and MPO. Yeah. They're not really comparable, I guess. The 1,000 isn't the same for men and women.
Yeah. Yeah, I would lay that up.
Yeah.
But that's still good. It's still a good thing to ponder.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So, and you know, so Brody's at 983 now and Paige is at 984, so...
Oh man!
You can try. Yeah,
I'd love to see
them.
I'd love to see a head-to-head battle.
Yeah. All right. This one. This is another one. Is this another Facebook one?
Yes.
This is from Jeff Revilla.
Yep.
Okay. This is the statement. You have to eat string cheese by stringing it, like pulling it off string by string, or else you're a sociopath. Sarah, I'll let you go first.
Oh, run this all day. As someone who is a giant fan of string cheese. That's the whole point. The word string is in the name. You have to string it. You can't just bite it. If you're going to bite it, you might as well just get a block of mozzarella cheese or shredded cheese. You have to do the work to eat the string cheese.
You have to do the work to eat the string cheese, she says. I'm going to lay this one up, if only because I don't think that, like, sociopathy is really involved here. I mean, I think... Like, does this also mean totally that is. If you, like, bite into a lollipop or a popsicle that you're a sociopath?
No, that's just impatience. I do both of those things.
But I feel like this is the same concept.
Mm,
if I'm hungry and there's a string cheese in front of me,
But a lollipop isn't called like a lick pop. It's not like telling you what you have to do to enjoy the food.
Pop it in and out of your mouth makes a little. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't go so far as saying a sociopath, but there's definitely something wrong. Like, you definitely do not.
Yeah, it's called hunger. Cheese. You're hangry.
Even still,
you eat it in bites when you're hungry. No, I mean, it's more fun.
We stand strong together.
It's more fun to string the cheese. I'll give you that. But I'm just saying, if you're like, I don't even like to eat just straight up cheese by itself. Cheese has got to be on something or with something.
Oh, the stinkier the better.
Ooh, no thank you.
Yum, yum, yum.
All right. Well, that was a good one. That was a good one this week. If you've got anything for us to debate in Runner Layup, hit us up, radio@pdga.com. Sarah, we, I believe, are out of time. Do you have shout-outs?
I was actually trying to think of some shout-outs before this.
If you don't have one, that's okay.
Couldn't come up with one that came to mind easily, so no. It's hard to let you down.
Oh, that's okay.
What about
you? It's not laying me down. No, not really. Just shout-out to the people who are just, you know, like... The world is crazy sometimes, and like I've found myself just needing a lot of distractions, you know, kind of like balancing that whole like responsibility of being aware of what's going on in the world, but also trying not to be distressed by it. So shout out to everybody else who's maybe feeling that same way, and also shout out to any parents who are working with their kids through distance learning right now, because it's not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, how's
and
that
shout
going
out to
for you?
Shout out to the teachers who are managing all this. It's fine. Oh, my kids, the hardest part about my kid is that she didn't want to get out of bed in the morning. Her schedule has it's gotten bad. Her schedule has gotten so messed up because of all this. So she's been a bit unpleasant in the mornings, but by the time she's awake, she's okay. But and also shout out to the teachers. Like maybe a lot of people who listen to the show don't know this, but I used to be a teacher. And I couldn't imagine doing what all the teachers are doing right now. It's everything's so unknown, and they're handling it, at least at the schools around here, with so much poise and grace. And if you're listening to the show and you are a teacher, please know that you have my unending gratitude and respect. So props to the teachers out there. And if you're a teacher listening to this show, get some disc golf in your school.
Yeah. Agree.
That's the way to do it. Indoctrinate the youth, people. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Sarah, enjoy the GMC, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, so for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we will catch you soon.